Hello, hello, guys. You're listening to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And today on the podcast, let's talk about being a pre-med. Yay. I have my office crew with me.
How exciting.
This is Thomas. Thomas is pre-med at UCLA.
Hello, guys. How are you?
And Thomas, what year are you?
I'm a third year right now.
What are you studying?
I'm studying physiology right now, and I graduate next year.
Amazing. And then Callie, it's our last day for Callie from UC Berkeley.
Sad.
I know. I'm so sad to be leaving you all.
So Callie's been here.
I'm gonna miss you so much.
Callie's been with us for almost a year now, and she's a pre-med, super smart, 95% on the MCAT, and super great grades at UC Berkeley. What did you study at Berkeley?
At Berkeley, I study nutritional sciences with an emphasis in physiology and metabolism. So I know Thomas and I, it sounds like we have some of the similar interests here in physiology.
Really fun.
Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Today on the podcast, I'm going to talk about, like, what does it take to be a pre-med? Just because I get so many questions, and I really like being a role model for people who are interested to go into medicine. I worry sometimes about the future of medicine, like who is going to take care of me when I am old and I need a really good doctor? Are millennials even going to care? Or is it all going to be an Instagram-focused society of beauty, wealth, and luxury and excess? I don't know. But I'm looking for people, men and women of character, substance, intelligence, who seek a calling and a passion and want to have a lifelong learning process. And if you're one of those people, I think you should think about going into medicine. And it can be in any form. You can be a physician's assistant. You can be a nurse, a medical assistant, a PA. But the field of medicine is broad and wide. You guys are headed for a long, hard road. So, did you know that?
Oh, yes.
I think med school in general is such a weeder process. You have to first get weeded out by organic chemistry. Then you get the weeding process of taking the MCAT. And that just means that they're the people who are not truly driven to go into medicine. If you're not driven, you're going to feel so much pressure and not enjoy the process, and you're going to leave it. And that's probably a good thing. It's okay to start a path and leave it because it's just not right for you. Mm-hmm. Right? I had many instances in school where I thought I could not do it, and I thought OCHEM would be the death of me. And I never got a B in my life, and I think I got a B minus in OCHEM. But I just want to tell you guys, you can still overcome those obstacles. So today, in this day and age, what do you have to do to be a pre-med? You have so many prerequisites.
I feel like you have to do everything, not just your grades. Your grades obviously need to be really great, but also your extracurriculars. I know it sounds like often that people, like, you have to do certain extracurriculars. Like, it's really good to have research. It's really good. You need, like, clinical exposure and all sorts of, like, volunteer service hours. But I think that some people get this idea that they have to do, like, certain things, when I think that medical school classes are looking for not just, like, diversity, like, in an individual. Like, they want people who are interested, like, in what they're passionate about. And so you need to have, like, a well-rounded repertoire of activities, but I think they'll be more impressed with maybe fewer activities and things that you're, like, really passionate about than trying to do, like, everything and sort of fit a pre-med mold.
Yeah, maybe you go for depth versus breadth of experience. So one thing that you've done repeatedly and you've gotten involved at a high level because you have a lot of focus versus you've tried a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I feel like it's getting harder and harder. And they're not only looking for the people who study 24/7. They want people who go out, talk to people. They're more social. They don't want socially awkward people. That's something I've been noticing. People who like to enjoy sports, going out, talk to people. And yeah, not only be good in your classes, you have to be more than that.
Definitely. I think you have to be a human being because you're dealing with humans who are flawed, who have insecurities, who you need to be able to approach a person. Like, even in my profession, to walk into a room and judge a person's face or their beauty and to be able to point out what things they have as assets or weaknesses, you have to be able to really converse and you have to make someone feel at ease. I think that you need to know early if you want to be a doctor. Unfortunately, it's one of those things that the earlier you know, the more likely you can do the extracurriculars and the research and the things you need to do. So as soon as you have an inkling, or even if you don't, jump in and get some hands-on experience. Like, go shadow a doctor, go and do volunteer work and see if you like the patient setting or if it just gives you the heebie-jeebies and it's not for you. See if you can mask this, you know, if you can handle the sight of blood. And then research, like even if you do bench work research, anything that's scientifically related, you'll have an idea if you've found something that interests you. Mm-hmm. They have an expression in medicine, it's the road to happiness. So the specialties that are the hardest to get into, the road, radiology, ophthalmology, anesthesiology, and dermatology. And I would say plastic surgery is right up there. Yeah, and my specialty, head and neck surgery, is also right up there. So head and neck surgery is one of the early match specialties, and it's like one of the top five, I think, hardest residencies to get into. So I was really delighted to get into it, but I worked my butt off to get, had to get all honors in year one and year two of med school, and then all honors in the clinical rotations. And then I got something called third year AOA, which is Alpha Omega Alpha, some honors, National Honor Society. So it seems like, oh, well, it's okay. It's easy to get into. It's not. I broke my butt trying to get into this field, and I am really glad I did. And it's worth it in the long run. But that road to happiness, if you're interested in any of those specialties or any of the super competitive ones, your research needs to start is as an undergraduate, actually. And that's challenging because you don't even know who you are when you're 19 and 20. Mm-hmm. And people want you to define yourself already.
I agree with Dr. K about we need to start as soon as possible. But at the same time, it's never too late. If you want to be a doctor, it's never too late for that. There's parents who's, I know parents studying for the MCAT right now. They have kids. Some people are in their 30s. And it's not all about being an undergrad student just after high school.
It's true. I actually think in my med school class, the youngest person was 14, which was ridiculous.
Wow. How does that even work?
She was so smart. She took all the classes at Long Beach University when she was in high school. And then she actually is a practicing physician right here at Huntington Hospital. Now she's a very well-known oncologist, Dr. Wow. Cynthia Martell. She was 14. Wow. But we all felt kind of awkward because we were all like 23 and hanging out, and she was being dropped off by her mom with her backpack and her. She kind of wore like her mom outfits, like you could tell it was mom's pantyhose and mom's little outfit, and it was hard for her. I felt bad for her because anatomy class was not easy for her to face the dissection of the cadavers. It's not easy for anyone, but imagine being 14. Yeah. And then the oldest gentleman was 55, and he was probably one of the best students because his life experiences really mm-hmm. helped him to focus down on what's important, what to study, what's just like minutia. When you're in your 20s, you don't know. You just drown yourself in everything. So you're absolutely right. You can do it at any age, and you really just have to have the commitment. But I think in addition to early research, you got to have the college grades. So if you're a late bloomer and you goofed off freshman year, you need to buckle down, maybe do a fifth year, maybe do extra summer classes and boost your GPA.
Or like a postdoc. I know a lot of people do that after they graduate as like a postdoc program to improve some of their grades.
Yeah, post-baccalaureate program.
Some people get masters too, then apply to med school after getting mm-hmm. their masters.
Yes, definitely. And then the MCAT is sad, but you need the grades because to some extent they screen like your ability to sit and study and absorb a ton of material. And you do need to be able to do that in med school. It doesn't pay to get into med school if you're a creative, fun, interactive type, but you just can't memorize stuff because, sorry, you do still have to know things. It's not all just a Google-based world.
Yeah. A lot of memorization.
You have to be able to memorize a certain amount of content goes into your head. Like, I can't, in the operating room, look things up in my phone like, oh, where was this artery and blood vessel? No, I need to memorize it. So the MCAT screens for that. And then recommendations are so important. So definitely get all your recommendations lined up. Go out of your way to work with the best lab, the best people, the best advisor that you can. And if you need advice, you can always DM me or Thomas or Kelly. Kelly, like you're 95% on the MCAT. That's crazy.
Good job, Kelly. I'm really proud of you.
I know.
Teach
me how.
Thanks.
I honestly don't. I'm positive I did not have an good 95 job on my MCAT.
I guess I'm just good at sitting on my butt and studying. I don't know. Or I get up and run around, and then I'm ready to sit down and study.
Now I know who's going to tutor me up for the MCAT.
Yeah, now you have tutoring built in.
Yeah, so would you tell us what you did for the MCAT? How did you study? How long? What?
So I studied for about 2.5 months, I would say. And I took a course, which I find really helpful because I learn best in like an environment where I'm with other students and interacting. So it was like, I took a class, so I had that sort of classroom support. But then I also studied like primarily just by myself or like at my computer in a library, the rest of the week. I like taking one day off per week just to sort of recharge and do some other things. And let my brain absorb everything that I had been working on the other 6 days that week. I also did research part-time when I was studying. It wasn't anything super intense, but just something that I had to do, you know, other things to do, so it wasn't super, like, I don't know, super crazy all at once, just to take my mind off, but also keep my gears grinding and doing something that I enjoy, which was the research I was doing. But yeah, I think it only, that's what I did for a summer, and then I took it in August, and that was how I studied.
And she did a gap year, so it's always a good idea to do a little gap year to, number one, grow up a little, immerse yourself into, great if you can come work in a doctor's office and see what it's really like when you go into practice, because if you don't do a rotation, if you don't ever get to work on the clinical side, you never know. Like, I had a friend who was one of those people who did all of the academics and got the grades, and then she went to interview and interact with patients. She was like, I just hate people. I don't think I like people. I'm not a people person. Yeah. I don't really want to get all up close and personal with so many people. Yeah. Like, when you're a doctor, you have to say hi to 25, 30 people in a day. And that's a lot. Like, imagine going to a cocktail party and shaking hands with 25 people and knowing their intimate details and their medical problems and making judgments and issuing decisions for them. Can you imagine 30 people in a cocktail party? I'd be exhausted. Yeah. So you got to be sure that it's the right field for you. And I think doing a rotation is very helpful. So clinical rotation. And then once you get into med school, you can go so many different directions. You can be a clinical kind of a physician who really works with patients. You can do academics. You can do research. You can do surgery. So many decisions to make.
I think that's the beautiful part about medicine, though, is like you can do like, it's obviously one large field, but then you can kind of pick, go down the area that you feel like is your calling. You can do a lot of things with it, so that's really great.
Well, I'm gonna really miss you, Kelly.
We're gonna miss you so much, Kelly. She's the one who trained me the most, by the way. She
was so patient. So if you screw up, I'm gonna be calling
really
her.
She's and she very helped me sweet. A lot. Yeah, I really appreciate your help.
Kelly has spearheaded our Radius butt study, which we are doing to do correction of cellulite dimples, which is going to be ongoing all summer long. And if you haven't had a chance to come in or you want to be screened and be participating in our Radius Butt study, we're going to be actively starting probably in June, July, and August. So pay attention. Send us a DM if you're interested. And that's it for now. Thanks so much for tuning in to Beauty Bites with Dr. K, Secrets of a Plastic Surgeon. And Callie, best of luck to you. I know you're going to make an amazing doctor, and you know you have my letter of recommendation. You admissions directors who are out there listening, I'm giving her my personal stamp.
Thank you. I'll be here. I won't be too far away.
That's it for now. Stay beautiful and find me on my Instagram at Beauty by Dr. K, DrKay, doing amazing things with people's faces. And our website is the same. Send us an email if you're interested in the Radius Butt Contouring Study. Bye for now.